Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you can find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or you can go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we talk about the future. We talk about what's happening in the world today and where we think things are going, and we're not afraid to take a pretty contrarian view of what's happening in the world and where the world is going. To wit, we believe that if you're not excited about the future, you're not paying attention. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, how are you, Phil?
I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear you're feeling well, and you ought to be. Your home team did pretty good this afternoon.
Well, we have an incredible little sports story to relay. I was going to say I had put on our outline of the show today football, but Michael reminded me that even though it's pretty much over for the Rockies, in fact, I believe they're mathematically eliminated from the playoffs in the year 2009 at this point. It's still baseball season, so let's say hi to our chat host Michael Darling and give us your Cubs update. They still in it? How are they looking?
I'm here, and of course they're still in it. This is 2008. This year is next year, and all I can say to the rest of the true blue Rocky fans or the hardcore Rocky fans is, next year for you is next year. In fact, the Cubs actually had a Hurricane Ike disruption to their season because they were supposed to be playing in Houston all this weekend. So they didn't play Friday, they didn't play yesterday, and they're playing one game today, which I thought was kind of surprising. But apparently the whatever the stadium is the Astros play in drains really well.
Interesting. So
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, are they a game ahead, a game behind? They're dead even? How's the division shaping up?
Well, let's see if I can – I hadn't practiced this because I wasn't prepared, but after Labor Day – and we're after Labor Day, if the Cubs are still in the playoff hunt, and they clearly are, I prefer not to discuss their actual standings. I just don't want to verbalize it out loud.
Fair enough. Okay, absolutely. We don't want to jinx anything here. We don't want to.
But I will say this. The Democratic National Convention was in Denver this year, just a couple weeks ago, and this is the year 2008. The last time the Democratic National Convention was in Denver was 1908, and the last time the Cubs won a World Series was 1908.
So, yeah, you mentioned that a couple weeks ago on the program, actually. So,
yeah,
it was before Labor Day, though.
Now you got to say it again. That's right.
You want to talk about a meme. Okay, there it is, the relationship between the Democratic National Convention in Denver and the Cubs winning the World Series 100 years later, seeing that fall into place. You know Cubs fans are all over this information, I'm sure.
I've been a Cubs fan. I grew up on the north side of Chicago and then in the burbs, and I was born there into a family of, I would say, polite Cubs fans. They weren't going to root for anybody else, but they weren't really like baseball nuts. I am, and so it's a whole different thing for me and my circle of Cubs fan friends. But the people talk about the Cubs, the curses and the bad luck and the stuff, and I'm like, you know what? I don't care about some four-legged, cloven-hoofed animal from the 50s. Doesn't matter.
You know, he won't actually say goat, but yeah. Go ahead.
I didn't say that.
Yeah.
I took note of what he didn't say. That's right.
That's right. I'm just saying I would cook the thing and eat it. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. And anything before that or anything since then, it just doesn't matter. But that said, other things do, and they might, and so you never know.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll keep that in mind, and you keep us posted on the baseball situation as it keeps going, because I won't have anything else to say about baseball this year, I'm afraid, at the rate we're going. So And normally we don't, just for anyone listening for the first time this evening, this isn't really a sports program per se. We talk about the future actually on this show, but we do sidebar into sports from time to time. And, Stephen, you had mentioned, the Broncos played the San Diego Chargers this afternoon. I just wanted to mention what an awesome, last 2 minutes that game had. The Broncos were behind by seven, scored a touchdown, and so now they're behind by 1 point, and less than a minute on the clock, and you expect that they will now kick the point after, run the clock down, and look for getting a lucky coin toss in overtime and going for the win in overtime. But no, Mike Shanahan, the head coach of the Broncos, says no, go for the win now. So they went for the 2-point conversion. Got it with about 24 seconds left on the clock. San Diego takes the ball back and can't quite deliver on scoring. So just extremely exciting. And I thought a little bit meme related in that if there's an idea that has that has caught on, it's that in the waning seconds of a football game, you wouldn't take any risk there. You would settle up. You'd get the tie and then you'd go for the win in halftime. And yet Shanahan has set himself apart from other coaches in that respect. So that's my attempt to tie it in.
It was a great game. That last play it was exciting down to the last play, wasn't it?
It was an exciting game. It absolutely was. If anyone got a chance to see that, you saw a good game there for sure. So let's move quickly on. I think since we checked in on the hurricane situation when it was in Louisiana, we should just talk about what's going on with Ike. And Stephen, do you have any you're still virtual, compared to the rest of us in that region,
Ike actually rolled through where I am yesterday. It was a tropical storm by the time it got here, and so the winds were gusting to 40-50 miles an hour, and so I had limbs down all over the place in the yard and everything, but nothing serious. Down on the coast, I think we got lucky as far as the loss of life goes. There was just, it's not a whole lot of people lost their life, apparently. If it was a huge loss of life, I would think that we would know by now. And there've been a handful of reports of deaths, but fortunately and hopefully that number will stay low. It also looks like we may have lost, there might be a small amount of, it may be a smaller amount of economic damage than we thought initially. So, anyway, so we may have dodged a bullet, the economic loss is going to be significant, but it did not hit the refinery, so we may be okay. So.
Well, here's hoping. Absolutely, we seem to be trying to press our good luck with these things. I mean, obviously, it's not good luck for people who've suffered damage, and certainly not for those who've been injured or lost their lives. But relative to what could have happened, it looks like we might be coming off easy. And of course, our thoughts and best wishes and prayers are with all the folks in that region as hopefully this one dissipates. I note Sally J.M. Is having. Oh, okay, Michael is helping her out with that. Oh, it looks like the sound may have gone out, but Matt says it's back now.
Okay.
So,
Well, I'm not even.
Hopefully, everyone can hear us.
Okay.
it's fun doing a radio show on the internet. Okay, so here we are talking about the future. Let's see. Oh, I remember. I wanted to check in with you. I thought a good way to launch into our topic of memes again this evening, kind of recapping where we were last night. For those not familiar with the idea, memes are ideas that spread like viruses. They are ideas that use us human beings to reproduce themselves. That take hold, that get caught by people, and that spread themselves out into the broader culture, much the way genes reproduce via their organism hosts. So we talked about memes last week, and we talked about some good ones, and we talked about some bad ones. We're going to pick that discussion up this week. But Stephen, you had an interesting anecdote about what's happened at the SiteMeter site that I think might relate to our whole overall discussion of memes.
This afternoon, at Instapundit. There was Glenn linked to a blog called The Other McCain. Anyway, just a blogger that happens to be named McCain. And he's not John McCain. So anyway, he calls himself The Other McCain. Anyway, he talks about how awful the new SiteMeter program is. Right? It's a web application, and SiteMeter has always been pretty simple. It does its job well. It monitors your traffic, and it lets you know where your traffic is coming from, that kind of thing. And so bloggers have been using SiteMeter for some time, several years. And they launched a new site meter. You have to log in to see your stats, and they've got all this other stuff. Well, it was this particular the other McCain. He came in and said, this is terrible, and so he started gathering comments from across the web. Our friend Stephen Green, the Vodka Pundit, said that this thing is so loaded with useless Web 2.0 crap that it's useless. what was once great now sucks. Thanks, SiteMeter guys. And then, it goes on and on. Pretty much the worst thing that's been done to an established brand since New Coke. Suck so bad it blows. just on and on. All these guys. And I was laughing at how bad that was. So I just said, okay, well, I got to see how bad it could it possibly be. So I go to SiteMeter.com, and there's a message up there, guys. We're so sorry. This was we're loading up the old system right now. Excuse the inconvenience. So basically, they launched a new system, and within hours, they got the feedback that it was terrible and went back to the old system. And so, I guess that's a good example of a meme getting just absolutely destroyed before it even really got launched.
Well, actually, what you really see there, the meme that the new SiteMeter sucks is the actual meme.
That's the idea. The new SiteMeter was the product that got shot down by the meme, I guess. So
exactly. Yeah. So that idea caught on so fast that they. It sounds to me like pretty much aborted their launch or tried to undo their launch almost as quickly as they had done it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it was universally panned. I wonder if they had an idea of how bad it was before they launched it and how poorly it would be received. It seems strange that they wouldn't know, but I guess the good thing is you don't have to know how it'd be received. If you can pull it down that fast and give us back the old thing that everybody loved, you've lost less than a day.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it just goes to show you how much of an age of memes we live in. How much of an age of quickly, rapidly copied, rapidly catching on ideas we live in, particularly for things on the. On the internet, and you think about the comparison to New Coke, where did they just not grasp that this was going to be a disaster ahead of time? Apparently, sometimes they don't grasp that ahead of time. But with New Coke, that whole thing took a matter of weeks, maybe a month, to kind of unfold, and then suddenly they were Coke classic, and it was this huge media blitz. This thing all happened in a matter of hours, right?
That's right. That's right. We've got a call.
Actually, that's Sally JM. She's listening to the show since she couldn't get on the.
That's just fine. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's glad you're able to hear us now, Sally. If there's just one call, I assume that's who it is because she didn't say she called in. So.
Okay. That sounds fine.
Yeah. So all we need now is enough lines to accommodate. Several
all of our
users.
Listeners.
Exactly.
We have two more lines. If you'd like to call in, the number is 347-215-8972, and we may even bring you into the show, or you can just listen.
Yeah,
your choice.
Yeah, if you call in and you're not Sally and you don't tell us ahead of time, we are going to bring you on because we're going to assume you called to talk memes. And you can join the discussion online, or as Stephen said, you can give us a call. Either way, 347-215-8972. So let's get back into our discussion and where we left it last week. We had just arrived at this interesting notion of there's some memes we're better off without.
That's right.
There are some that that are like baggage, and that over time have to be eliminated. And you told an excellent story, and I can't remember the guy's name who was involved in this, but he was some British official in India, probably.
That's right.
In the 19th century.
General Charles Napier, I believe, is who it was, if I remember correctly. And he had, you know, there was this meme, this idea that, you know, when a rich man dies, you burn all his property on a big fire to celebrate his life. And guess what? Women were considered property, so they got to burn along with everything else. And the British started cracking down on that, and the locals, you know, complained about it. This is our culture. You're attacking our culture. This is something that's important to us, and that is our custom. And the general responded, "Well, we also have a custom. We hang people that burn women. And so you follow your custom, and we'll follow ours." And so basically, the one custom gave way to another. So that's that no longer happens in India anymore, and I'm sure that India's better off for it.
No doubt they are. Although I'm sure the folks in India would also be quite quick to point out that another meme that died was the idea of colonialism, the idea that that a country like you know, Britain could come down and tell India, "Well, we're going to be in charge of you, and you're going to be part of our empire." That's another idea that. That seemed to work really well for the world for centuries, all of human history up until, I guess, the 20th century. It seems to have really have hit its peak in probably the, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th century, right in there somewhere, and it's pretty much gone now. I mean, I don't think anyone really practices that meme anymore. That's probably a pretty good example of one that's been...
I think for whatever reason, it proved not to be profitable anymore. And I for whatever reason, so it was left along, by the wayside, and replaced instead by multinationalism, you know, where and a global economy. So, and you hear phrases like cultural imperialism. Where, you know, the whole world has to watch American movies. Well, you know, we don't do it at gunpoint. You know, if you like American movies, you can feel free to watch them, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
But
so
it's a whole lot less. It's a whole lot less. It's not at gunpoint. So watch them if you like. You know. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's pretty much a free market in play there. So it looks like we do now have a caller. Stephen, because it looks like Sally wants to share with us her meme she'd like to kill.
Okay, let's bring her on. Hi, Sally.
Hi.
Hey, welcome to the program.
I was just typing on your chat room, and I'd like to talk about my least favorite meme, which is the idea that a society's government can run everything. This is a bad one that's... started in the 19th century and has really trashed things in the 20th century, pretty much starting our world wars and enslaving hundreds of millions of people, and I'd like to see it go.
And,
I think that's a great example.
I guess, Sally, then you're a bit of a libertarian. Is that how you would describe yourself?
I'm a Republican with economic libertarian leanings.
Yeah, okay. I tend to lean that way myself. I can't speak for Phil or Michael, though.
Well, I don't affiliate with any party. I do agree that the idea that government can solve everything is one that is one that caught on big time, and probably starting in the late 19th century, and became this driving force in the 20th century, didn't it? I mean, that's really what the World War was about. That's what the Cold War was about. It was about different models of how you make the government run everything, right? It wasn't even necessarily that one side was saying you don't, and the other side was saying you do. It was a question of, well, we think this is the right way to have the government run everything, pretty much on one side, and the other side saying no, we think it's that this is the right way. That idea became so ingrained in thinking that that to suggest the government shouldn't be running everything was actually this kind of outlier position. But the libertarian meme, the government should be limited, is one that I think started catching on again, probably about midway through the 20th century, and
I'd say Friedrich Hayek had a whole lot to do with it when he wrote and published The Road to Serfdom, showing how having the government run everything will just run everything down, because the best way to have a really free society is to have a whole lot of people making their own decisions and then sort of interconnecting and networking with each other. So I think Hayek had a whole lot to do with fighting this bad meme.
Okay, and I look at it as probably from the standpoint of just taking hold of government in the U.S. You look at, say, like the ascendancy of Ronald Reagan, right?
Yeah.
That would be
Reagan adored Hayek.
That's where that idea starts to catch on. Well, I think that's a great example. That's a terrific example of a meme that. That got hold of the world, and now we're dealing with it. I think the interesting thing is we haven't settled on what the final answer to that one is, as far as a coherent set of memes about, well, this is absolutely the right role for government, and this absolutely isn't. I think there are probably at least in the U.S., there's probably a pretty good division between people who think there should be more involvement by government and a bigger role for government, and those who think that that it should be less. And it comes down to, as Michael mentions here in the back channel, I don't know if he's brought it up on the on the chat room, the competing memes are government and free market, right? These are the two memes that are kind of in competition with each other. And what we're looking for, interestingly, I think, in our society is what the right balance, right, what the right tension between those two things is. When President Bush came into office, he had this idea of compassionate conservatism, right? I don't want to get into the politics of that, but it seems like everyone tries to find an accommodation between these two memes rather than stake out an absolute position on one or the other.
And I think that this year's presidential race is going to be more of a battle on this than even the war in Iraq.
Hmm. I think that's entirely possible. That could be. Of course, that starts to get into politics now. And as you can see, Stephen just cringes when you
write. That's okay, Sally. My cringe factor is don't you worry about.
just kidding. But we try to keep it. We'll try to keep it on the meme thing. Okay. Well, I think that's an outstanding example, Sally. And we thank you for bringing that one on. We'll probably we'll look at a few more here as we go, and we'll put you back on mute and let us know in the chat room if you want to come back on. You're kind of first in line of all the callers. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, it was great.
All right. Well, I mean, the other memes that should be killed, I think, would be an example of, we talked about, you know, women that are being burned along with the other, you know, with what was considered property then. I think, you know, you could put in that slavery, you know, racism, sexism. I mean, there's
absolutely those are all ideas that caught on very early and got reproduced and mm-hmm. became just part of the fabric of society for millennia, right? I mean, they were
right.
Part of the fabric of society, and these are memes that. It's interesting. You think about the slavery meme. I think about that one because we talked about last week. We talked about the fire meme, right? The idea of fire spreading. Slavery must be one of the earliest. I don't know what to call it. Social structures that was ever developed. Probably sometime. I'm going to think after agriculture was introduced. We got this idea, oh, wait, I can get a lot more done if I just start making people do what I want them to do, right? And it's probably been with humanity as long as there's been commerce. Now, officially, the civilized world has eliminated slavery for over the last century and a half or so, and it officially doesn't exist anymore. Although definitely there are places in the world, particularly in parts of the African world, parts of the Arab and Muslim world, where it's still practiced.
Right.
So it's a meme that we would love to see killed that unfortunately hasn't been completely killed yet.
Well, it was probably, if you look at it broadly, it was probably the first way that mankind was able to leverage the efforts of other people in order to become wealthy. And so you gather, you put as many people within your as possible, in servitude to you, and that was a method by which people got wealthy. Well, obviously there's it's morally wrong because your rights. We have decided as a society that our rights should stop where other people's rights kick
again.
In. Yeah, and so there, and we have other ways that we can leverage the efforts of others, and people will voluntarily, enter into work and work for you if you pay them money, So that's the way now that people leverage the efforts of others. So, and good riddance to slavery. So yeah.
Well, absolutely. The sooner it can be completely stamped out, the better. But I think it's a good point that that like a lot of other things we've talked about on this show, we talk about this what we would like to think of as upward moral progression of humanity, and definitely it can be seen that way, where we stop mistreating each other, where we start respecting each other's rights, where we start respecting the environment. But one of the ideas we keep bumping back into as we talk about these things is that people start doing these things as soon as they're able to afford to.
That's right.
As soon as it becomes the effective business model to do so. And in fact, in
our morality is remarkably pragmatic. If we can afford to be better people, we tend to be better people. And so
right.
I guess if there's something to be learned from that, it's that let's do our best to be able to afford to be better people. Go ahead.
It would seem that the technological and economic progress actually provide the substrate in which you can be better. They allow for a better world. I mean, we talked about how the Civil War was really this war between an industrial revolution-driven economic model and an agrarian economic model.
Slaveholding economic model. And
fortunately, it was all about agriculture. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. And so, unfortunately, the more modern system prevailed, and we were able to go on to be more moral people. So, that's good.
In fact, I would even say inevitably that's what happened. I'd like to think inevitably that that's what happened. It had to happen because the progress of technology and economics had taken us to that stage where we had passed out of that. I mean, if you go back, you think about you go back to the analogy of fire. Whoever started the slave meme came up with a pretty powerful way to structure their society. I'm not saying it was a good way, but probably a slave-holding society had more resources at their disposal and became more viable economically and probably in every other way than any other society. They were probably able to outcompete other societies. In a sense, have you ever heard of this book, Unleashing the Killer App?
No, I've never heard of that.
Okay, I'm going to put a link up on the chat room. It's a great book that talks about how killer applications are kind of well. It's basically a marketing book, and it talks about how to develop killer applications within your own business. But it posits this idea of the game changing invention, the game changing application that rewrites history as they go, and they give wonderful examples that you wouldn't think about, things like the stirrup on the horse, and suddenly the armies who had that were much more successful than the ones they were fighting, and it became this game changing technology. Well, I would say that in that sense, probably slavery was one of the earliest killer apps, as was probably fire, as was iron, right? Learning to work with metal. It was a meme that once a society got a hold of that idea, they took on a huge competitive advantage, and they carried that one forward. And any society that was going to try to compete with them was going to have to have that one too. And so slavery was there for the longest time and then suddenly became less viable economically. And now we live in a, I'd say, a much better world because we've progressed economically past it.
You know, another thing, being a Southerner, you may not have thought of this before, but it's absolutely true. Air conditioning in the South. You know, the South, I would say pretty much anything south of the Mason-Dixon line, our competitiveness, you know, is almost as if Reconstruction had to wait for the air conditioning to be invented, because the South remained poor and backwards, basically, until homes and offices were air-conditioned. Efficiencies then, I mean, increased remarkably, and we were and. You know, you have major business centers like Dallas, Houston, Atlanta, you know,
sure.
And, you know, that are now becoming, it's, you know, major cities on par with things that were in the north before, you know. So it's just
That's
another
a great example.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Air conditioning, the killer app that empowered the new South.
That's right.
Amazing. And we're getting other, Michael's given us some more examples, Las Vegas, Phoenix, Mexico City. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, Phoenix, Arizona, where would that place be without air conditioning? You know, I don't think it would be the thriving metropolis that it is today, that's for sure.
That's right.
All right, this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're talking about memes we'd like to kill, and then we're going to talk a little bit about memes that we want to promote, and we're going to start some new memes tonight. So everybody be thinking. I think there. What do you think, Stephen? There probably should be a coffee mug in this for whoever comes up with the best new meme.
Absolutely, and of course we have to exclude ourselves from this.
We
can't award ourselves
a
coffee mug.
The advantage that we've been working on it all week. Plus, we could buy ourselves a coffee mug anytime we want to. I mean, really, why make that part of the show? So if you want to join our discussion, if you have an idea for a meme that that you think should be promoted, or you have your own idea for a meme, we'll be soliciting those ideas a little bit later. You can call us at 347-215-8972 or join us on our lively online chat this evening. And speaking of that, Michael, what other ideas for memes that ought to be killed did we see showing up in the chat?
I'm not sure I can succinctly verbalize a meme that was suggested in the chat for death.
Okay.
Death.
Fair
okay.
Enough.
Well, you know, I wrote on that this week. Basically, the idea of life extension being. Well, here's the deal. Here's the deal. Okay. The average person. Back in Roman times, in ancient Rome. About 20% of the population, from the time of birth to death, lived to age 40. Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And by 1960, that 20% of the population was making, you know, 70, 75. That figure. There's I was looking at basically if all diseases are cured, we would make it to about age 95. 20% would make it to about age 95 if all diseases were cured. In other words,
if
you don't consider aging a disease, obviously.
Oh, I'm sorry. All other diseases. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, all other diseases, not counting aging. If you cure them all, according to this graph that I posted, that was in a Marvin Minsky paper. Then you know only 20% of us lived age 95, and then we all all of us are dead by age 115, with all diseases cured. So basically you're getting another 10 years over where we are right now. If we cure
right.
all diseases, all we're getting is about another 10 years of life expectancy. It seems to me, in order to have any room for real improvement, you have to address aging. You can't just stick to the model we have now of curing disease and expect any real. We can improve at the margins a little bit on life expectancy, but to have real improvement on life expectancy, we have to start addressing aging now. We really don't have that much more room for improvement otherwise.
Right. Right. That's the one. That's the one we have to work on if we're going to make any progress.
That's
and
right.
You know, just as far as a meme that has appeared over the last decade and a half, I mean, it's been around forever. The idea of eternal youth, or you know, finding the fountain of youth, or something like that. That idea has existed as more of a fantasy forever. Although I think that probably during the Middle Ages, when people were seriously studying alchemy and trying to find you know, secrets of the universe through that, there might have been some real belief that that something could work to slow down aging or to make people, you know, quote unquote, live forever. But as a serious technological and scientific proposition, the idea of curing aging as a disease is, how old is that idea? Is it even a decade old?
In its current form, it's about a decade old, maybe. You know.
Yeah.
And it's our fantasies sometimes have a tendency sometimes of coming true. I mean, before the Wright brothers, there was the fantasy of flying. And then it came to pass. So perhaps technology can deliver on this dream as well. But that's basically what I was writing this week, was that in order to have real room for improvement on life, and that's the thing we tend to do. We always want to push against our boundaries and our limitations. But here we are up against it now. We don't have real room for improvement except through addressing aging directly. And so
they have to go after aging directly, because we've made so much progress with everything else that you're not going to see a big incremental jump.
That's right.
Yeah.
Without addressing aging. So
that's the one that something has to happen. So there's this discussion going on in the chat room about fast replicators. Michael, what's that all about?
Matt had suggested that in response to a question about whether or not something to be called a meme really needs to have a competitive advantage. And I answered that by saying, well, competitive advantage, maybe not. It doesn't need a competitive advantage to survive. It just needs a competitive advantage to thrive. And in the absence of a threat, it could survive a long time without actually thriving. And Matt had suggested, hey, it would be useful to point out or to distinguish between the fast replicators, to which, you know, partly playing devil's advocate and partly just exploring, I said, why? What do we care if it's a fast replicator? I mean, if I'm a marketing guy selling VCR videotape, I care that the VCR gets adopted rapidly. But if I'm a thinker thinking ideas, I'm not so sure I care if an idea is a fast replicator or if it's, you know, old and slow.
Well, I think that kind of hits the nail on the head, though. I think that ideas in the technology realm are almost certain to catch on fast, just because that's the medium that those things are discussed in. So fast replicators are going to be not only ideas about technology, but a lot of popular culture and a lot of political discourse is now driven by the internet. So those ideas are almost bound to replicate fast. It's almost like there's no alternative for them to reproduce, except for that they reproduce quickly. If they don't reproduce quickly, they're probably not going to reproduce at all. Think of the difference between a page that gets 6,000 digs and one that gets 20 digs, right? Dig provides a great example of fast replication in action. If everyone's saying yes, this idea is one that I choose to pass on to somebody else, that's going to be the one that succeeds. And I think that then becomes, Matt, what you're talking about in terms of competitive advantage. I think that the competitive advantage is that notion we talked about last week of usefulness of the information. So if I see three stories on the internet and one of them really catches my attention, I say, that's the one, and then I go blog about that, or I put that one on Dig, or put a link on my Facebook page or something like that. It's because of that usefulness content level of that content that I've decided pushes that on. And the perceived usefulness of information, I think, is the competitive advantage, and that's what's going to make it reproduce fast. So I actually think fast replicators and memes are the same thing, and that increasingly in the world we live in, all memes are going to be fast replicators. I don't think there's much room really for slow replicators these days.
Well, think of the political contest that's going on. If an idea does not replicate fast in this contest, it doesn't get heard. You know, if McCain, makes a comment about Obama, or Obama makes a comment about McCain, and then the bloggers take up one aspect of it, and they argue this way and that way. You got bloggers on the left, bloggers on the right, firing back and forth at each other. If somebody has this brilliant idea and, you know, types it up on their blog, but that blog is never read, then it, you know, it's almost as if they didn't, you know, it didn't matter at all, you know, not for that conversation anyway that's ongoing in this contest.
Right. Yeah, I think that the speed at which we're seeing these things unfold is so different from maybe not 2004, but compare 1984 to, or the 1988 presidential election with the 2008 presidential election, and
it's no comparison at all.
Yeah, I mean, the sheer volume of information you're dealing with about the races
right.
is just completely out of proportion anyway, because we have so many more media outlets and new media and all that kind of thing. But just the rate at which things spread, the rate at which we get that information, is just there's no comparison. And
yeah.
Michael points out, in 1904, when we reelected President Roosevelt.
By
the way, we should at some point, Michael, we're going to have you on, not this week, but at some point, and you can talk about your interesting connection to Teddy Roosevelt. I think that would be some compelling radio. I did want to clarify one thing. So your grandfather, whatever he was, great great grandfather, was a Rough Rider. Is that right?
My great grandfather was a foot soldier, and the Rough Riders are typically thought of as cavalry, although most of them didn't have horses, so the distinction is somewhat moot. And my grandfather was in Cuba for I don't know, 5 or 6 months during the Spanish-American War, which only lasted about 9 months.
But that was part. I mean, that's what we would think of as the Rough Riders, right? That was the group that Teddy Roosevelt led there in Cuba.
Yes.
Okay.
just because they weren't on horse doesn't mean they weren't Rough Riders.
Hey, I think it was Wild Bill Hickok who popularized and sort of nationalized the idea of the quote Rough Riders. I don't know that they were even calling themselves that when they were in Cuba, except for the fact that then Lieutenant Colonel Roosevelt had recruited these guys specifically to be cavalry, which was like the fighter pilot equivalent of the day.
Right. Right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, you talk about a meme. The whole urban legend of the Rough Riders. The reason I brought this up, I went to a school in Kentucky, Simpsonia, Kentucky, tiny little town in Kentucky, and our basketball team was called the Rough Riders. So, I mean, you know, obviously somebody had a connection there, or at the time the school was founded, that was huge in the minds of the local populace, what Roosevelt and those guys had done down there during the Spanish-American War, you know, to the point they had named their basketball team after it.
Well, I mean, much like naming a basketball team after the Vikings or I don't know, the some other mythical god, it doesn't make it any less powerful a motivator just because. You know, if you really found out what those guys were up to and who they were and what they were doing, it maybe didn't resonate quite so mythically.
Exactly. Well, that's one of the things we were talking about, the way rumors are spread, the way urban legends are spread, jokes are spread, just about anything in the meme sphere gets spread by people taking it and fixing it up a little bit, doctoring it just a little bit, so it's a little more entertaining. It sounds like Wild Bill Hickok got a hold of the Rough Riders, and you know, he gave them some marketing spin. He gave them an angle, gave it a narrative, as they would say today, to make the whole thing a more high concept entertainment kind of a product. So, where does that put us with memes? Are we ready to talk about the memes that we want to create ourselves, or Stephen, did you have a few more that you wanted to push out?
Well, why not? We are getting a little bit low on time, so let's get into the memes that we want to promote. Obviously, the meme I want to promote is that we really need to address aging, and call it a disease, call it whatever you like, but let's address it because that is the way that we're going to improve our lifespan at this point.
Oh, wait, I want to take this a step further. This isn't just a meme you want to promote. You've got to take that meme space, and here's a meme. You actually have to start a meme. So,
oh, okay. I can't say that I created that meme. That meme was created by other people. I guess I am. I caught the meme and I'm trying to transmit it. I guess at this point, so I need to come up with a brand new one.
Let me set the rules down here so it's fair for you and the listeners who are competing for the coffee mug. Of course, you're not competing, and neither am I.
Yeah, I'm out of that. Yeah,
but Michael, you don't get a mug either. But for the listeners, it doesn't have to be a wholly new idea. But what we're looking for is a wholly new meme. So give us a, you know, even if it's just a. Are you ready for some football, right? Even if you're just going to give us a catchphrase or a slogan to go on top of an existing memeplex, that's fine.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I had the
idea of Spock's chessboard a while back. I guess I could claim that as my official meme that I created. And the whole idea.
Great example.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. You wrote those. I mean, you've written a number of posts now on Spock's chessboard and. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Tell us how that works.
Well, I basically took an idea that you were passing along. You had picked up elsewhere that computers are advancing exponentially. So it's a little bit, it's like the rice on the chessboard parable.
Right.
You know, you put one grain of rice on the first square of the chessboard, and then you double it for every square. That's the way our computers are taking off. Basically, by the time you get to the 64 square, it's all the rice that has ever been produced in the history of the world. That's how fast doublings will take you up in the number of rice grains. Okay. My thought was that, you know, that's cool, but that doesn't really take in the how our society is advancing. We don't have one chessboard. We may have one base chessboard for computation, but we have other little boards that are feeding off of that and then feed back into it. Like, we have the computation chessboard as the base chessboard, and then we have a little chessboard over here for genetics and another little chessboard for nanotech and so on and so forth. And sometimes exponential advances maybe in nanotech might feed back into the computation chessboard, allowing us to make the next step and the next doubling there, and so on and so forth. So I called it Spock's chessboard because you got multiple chessboards.
We should
there.
Say, for those who aren't familiar, on Star Trek, the original series, Spock, the character, Vulcan, guy had a three-level chessboard that he played a different variation of chess on.
That's
three-dimensional
right.
Chess, yeah.
And which I would imagine it to be a hard game. as a matter of fact, I have a little sound clip from The Big Bang Theory. Have you watched that show, Bill?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite shows. We did a sound clip from that last year as well. So
okay.
I'm eager to hear what our characters are up to here.
Okay, well they're playing three-dimensional chess, and you got Leonard and Sheldon playing each other.
Okay.
And what you're hearing now is Leonard trying to decide what move he wants to make. And so he's doing one move, and he's taking it back. He's doing another move and taking it back.
Okay.
He's very unsure of himself.
Checkmate.
Obviously, he made
then,
the move.
Obviously, you're not well suited for three-dimensional chess. Perhaps three-dimensional Candyland would be more your speed. Reset the board. It must be humbling to suck on so many different levels.
Okay. I'm sorry. I just had to play that. But anyway.
So that's a good meme. Actually, that's the downside of the 3D chessboard, the Spock's chessboard, is that it gives us so many more opportunities to be bad at things, right?
That's right. If you're not bad enough at regular chess, then try 3D chess. You can be even worse. So
exactly. Gives you that much more to not succeed at. Well, let me let's check in with our chat room. Michael, you got a meme you want to introduce here this evening, or anybody else in the chat room got a meme for us?
Yeah, I'd like to quote the source for this one, but I can't. I saw a TED talk recently, and I'll have to go look it up so we can put it in the show notes. And the guy's an educator in England, and by educator I mean school teacher / administrator, and for what it's worth, a philosopher on how we should be running schools and teaching. And he made the claim that initially I thought was somewhat audacious, but later came to realize that I think he's smart because, and I, you know, like everybody, I think he's smart because he thinks like me. But what
right.
he made the claim was that creativity is at least as important as literacy. And on its surface, that struck me as odd. But hearing Stephen sort of partly wrestle with the vocabulary and partly with the idea that, well, you know, defeating aging or beating aging, it's not a new meme. It's, you know, other people have thought of it. Other people have been, but what we need is a way to tell the universe or to get people thinking about the fact that, A, it's important, but B, we got to be creative here. Being able to read Aubrey de Grey is one thing. Being creative enough to think as creatively as him is a whole other thing.
Go ahead, Stephen.
I was just going to say, yeah, I agree. I mean, it's one thing. I think it's a mistake that I think has been made too often in schools to, you know, just, you know, let's get the kids to, you know, read and write and do math and these things. But I think creativity is something that should be taught as well. I think that is something, you know, that we tend to have lost. There are fewer music programs, fewer art programs, and that's, I mean, I'm not talking just about creativity in those fields of music and art, but those are examples of ways that you can teach creativity that could be brought into other fields, even engineering and things like that. So I think
it's
an important thing.
Can it be taught, actually? Can creativity be taught? I mean,
well,
I
you could give kids an opportunity to exercise creativity, and then they and give them opportunities to succeed while being creative, and you know, they encourage them in those things. So yeah, I think it's something that you can certainly encourage.
Yeah, definitely you can encourage it, and I'd like to think it can be taught. I think that probably the methodology for teaching creativity would be pretty different from anything we've seen in school, including what's done in even in fine arts classes or in creative writing classes. I think to actually teach people to be more creative would be some really interesting courseware that we don't necessarily have yet. But I couldn't agree more. I mean, if you look at Stephen, the world you're describing, the world we live in, one where it's not just one square on the chessboard where things are increasing exponentially. It's multiple levels. It's multiple levels of change occurring at the same time, and each one of those different kinds of change that occur that is occurring is a different sort of possibility. Well, when we start thinking about, you know, what's the world like when you begin to combine possibilities from this level with that level with that level, I mean, that is truly at
it becomes
base.
A little bit chaotic, and you better be able to think quickly and creatively in order just to kind of to keep up. And so,
yeah, that is a creative process. I mean, that ultimately the idea of shaping the world out of all these different streams has to be a creative process. People have to think creatively to put all those different ideas together.
Right.
And that actually leads to the meme that I want to get started. So I'm trying to think of the best way to jump into this one. I think maybe if we go ahead and play the audio clip, this will introduce my idea.
Something's going to happen. And I wanted to say goodbye.
What's going to happen?
Something wonderful.
Mom, I'm scared. Okay.
that was pretty ominous, wasn't it?
That is just an ominous-sounding sound clip. Anyone in the chat room, quickly tell us the movie that came from. Anyone in the chat room other than Michael? Let's see if anyone can tell us what movie that came from. It was not Balding Saddles, which I've never actually seen Balding Saddles. But was that a Mel Brooks movie, perhaps? That's Headley. Okay, actually, that is from a movie called 2010, Odyssey 2. That is the sequel to Stanley Kubrick's classic masterpiece, 2001: A Space Odyssey. And just to set up what's happening there, that is not the instance of of that character saying that that I wanted to use. There's another one that's less ominous and less creepy, because in that scene, basically Dave Bowman, a man who is presumed dead these last 10 years, has mysteriously reappeared on TV and is talking to his widow about this interesting something that's going to happen. But I love the line, and he says it at least twice in the movie. I think he might say it three times. And what he says is, something's going to happen, something wonderful. And what he's referring to in 2010, I don't know, is it a big spoiler if I give away the end of a 25-year-old movie at this point, 23?
I say go for it. Spoiler alert now. Phil's about to give away the end.
Okay, I'm going
to
give away the end of 2010. You've had, like, since 1985 to see this movie, folks, so don't blame me, all right? Basically, what's happening in 2010 is that the aliens who've been interacting with us have introduced technology. They're loading the planet Jupiter with these monoliths. They're making it heavier and heavier and heavier until it reaches critical mass, and suddenly Jupiter explodes. It becomes a star, and all the moons of Jupiter are now planets orbiting this star, and so our solar system becomes this this binary sun system with two sets of planets. So it's a really kind of cosmological thing that occurs, but it is anticipated throughout the movie by this character Dave Bowman, who had disappeared at the end of the first movie, showing up from time to time and saying, something's going to happen, something wonderful. And this is the idea that I keep coming back to on The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, that I so want to get into the heads of other people. The idea that I would start a chain letter tomorrow, Stephen, if I thought I could help spread this idea, which is simply that going back to the
chessboard. Five of my friends.
Yeah, exactly. going back to the chessboard, or looking just at, say, the different subjects that we blog about or that we talk about on this program or that we hit in a typical Better All the Time, there are so many different areas in which massive, vast improvements are being made, and in which the potential for huge leaps forward for the human condition is being uncovered, that we really stand at the dawn of a completely new era in human history. And I can't actually tell you which wonderful thing is going to happen or which combination of things. But I can tell you this, that between life extension research and nanotechnology research and artificial friendly AI research and new ideas that are developing around energy and around materials fabrication and treatment of diseases and just any of these multiple different things we talk about working together, there is no doubt in my mind whatsoever that something is going to happen.
And it'll be
something
wonderful.
Exactly. So yeah. That's my meme. That's the meme I want to get going. And I think I would put that ahead even of Live to See It as a meme. I would like to get that started and get people internalizing that idea. Because I think if you look to the future with that expectation, it actually probably helps to bring something wonderful about, rather than if we look to the future with fear and trepidation. I think we have to be careful. We have to be cautious. And there are a lot of things out there that could be really bad that could happen, and we talk about those too. But where should our expectations be? I think our expectations should solidly be in the camp of saying, we think something's going to happen. We think something wonderful is going to happen. So that's my meme.
Well, we got to get a less ominous take on that from that movie. I know that there, we'll find it and we'll get it. So when we play it again, it'll be less ominous. So.
Okay. Yeah, we don't want to scare the kids listening at home. Yeah. with our new meme. So that's my meme. And Michael, any other late breaking memes from the chat room?
No. Okay, David Ray has been sort of, I think, onto something here. He's suggesting that the something wonderful optimism meme needs a symbol, a simple yet powerful symbol. Perhaps not the smiley face, but, you know, something equally impactful.
Oh, okay. Well,
how about an astronaut that looks like an embryo?
Well, they're
wow, for a show that doesn't get political.
I
didn't mean to be political.
That's an image stolen from 2001: A Space Odyssey.
That's
I was going
right.
to say we're probably treading on trademark issues anyway, using something's going to happen, something wonderful. I think if we were to copy that image, not only would we be increasing the chances that we're treading on trademark issues, I think we wouldn't eliminate the creepiness factor. Okay.
No way. I mean, that was a one creepy movie there at the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is kind of creepy. Okay. Any others, Michael?
I'll just bring up one thing that I brought up in the chat, and I think you're missing part of the point in 2010: A Space Odyssey, because it was a sequel to 2001, and I guess maybe, and something is going to happen, something wonderful, and it was creepy and all that. But Roy Scheider, as a I don't know, a lead actor, went from Jaws trying to chase sharks to blow them up in various ways, because in Jaws and then in Jaws 2. In Jaws 2, he didn't actually, blow the thing up, but it was just as awesome a shark death. In 2010, if you recall, in his home, he has his, what I assumed was his mistress dolphin swimming in a tank right in his house.
He did have dolphins living in his house, but I believe those were connected to the research that his wife, who was a scientist, was doing, actually.
Like I said, I'm suggesting that I saw the film, and I think that, Roy was having sex with dolphins.
Okay. Well, that will not be our symbol.
Thanks for sharing that observation. I didn't want to get too deep into the movie, because I think there is a comparison that can be made between the two, and obviously 2001 is the critically acclaimed film, 2010 is kind of the poorer relation. But I do like that phrase from it. Also, don't go badmouthing Roy Scheider. I think he's up there somewhere in the Charlton Heston pantheon. He's a lesser, kind of a Heston wannabe kind of a guy. But this takes us a little past our time, actually, Stephen, so maybe we should jump over quickly and talk about what our music is going to be.
Okay. We are our music tonight is from Susanna Blinkoff. It's her name, and the song is I Got Lucky.
Okay, I Got Lucky by Susanna Blinkoff. We'll look forward to listening to that. Now, those of you who are listening, if you're listening to this live or if you're listening to the MP3, still plenty of time to enter the competition for the coffee mug. Give us your ideas for memes you want to start. Leave them in the comments on Blog Talk Radio, or leave them on the comments at the show notes, which Stephen will be very diligently, and we appreciate it very much, putting up here in the next day or so. And, Stephen, thank you for your contributions this evening. Michael, to you and to all the folks listening in the chat room and
to
everyone
our caller
listening.
And everybody else, yeah.
Especially our caller, Sally.
Yeah.
To everyone listening, we look forward to being with you again on the next Fast Forward Radio. Good night.